from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont, online at wvhtf.org.
At the legislature today, a bill limiting abortions is on its way to the Senate after the House passed the legislation overwhelmingly. The international car service Uber wants to do business in West Virginia, but legislators have concerns. And we'll talk with the Secretary of the Department of Environmental Protection about the bill to roll back above-ground storage tank regulations on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. Delegates approved six pieces of legislation today, including a Senate bill that allows emergency responders, doctors, and family members to administer a drug to reverse the effects of an overdose. But it was House Bill 2568, the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act, that got the most discussion on the floor before it was ultimately approved. Liz McCormick has the story.
Members of the House debated the 22-week abortion ban for nearly 2 hours on the House floor. Republican and Democratic members alike stood to back the bill, including Delegate Lynn Arvon from Raleigh County.
This is about protecting a five-month-old or above unborn baby from pain, period. That's what we're discussing today. We're not discussing whether we should have abortion or not. If this bill passes, abortions will be allowed up to 5 months for any reason. I don't agree with that, but we have to start somewhere. And there is a debate about whether the baby experiences pain or not, but there's not debate in my mind. I carried three children. I said that yesterday. I know they experience pain. I know they react to external stimuli. If I turned the music up loud, they would kick me extra hard. People who've carried children know that. They experience pain.
The reason we have these laws is because government has a civil duty to protect human life. I hear over and over and over again about a woman's right to choose. We had a debate yesterday about rape and incest. I can be sympathetic with those situations, truly. They are bad situations, but you have to understand, we need to understand that government has a duty to protect human life. The scripture was quoted a minute ago. Where does that duty come from? That duty comes from Almighty God that gives individual rights, that gives family rights, that gives church rights, and it also gives rights and duties to civil government.
She has every right to visit her doctor and consult her doctor about what to do. She has every right to visit her minister and make decisions. But one thing that I'm really interested in today is that not once has she had the right to visit the father of the child either. And I will never understand that. And I know that there are a lot of men in here right now who would like to stand up and say, you know, where's my decision? But they can't. And so I would like to stand up for them because they would come off as selfish. But it's not selfish. It's just as much your decision. And I think this is the first step we can take to representing not just the child, but the father of the child as well.
Only Democratic delegates stood to oppose the abortion ban, including Delegate Nancy Guthrie of Kanawha County. Guthrie says she supports funding for family planning and birth control to prevent future abortions.
And finally, what I'm really for, and I pray that all of you gentlemen in this room, I said it before and I will say it again, would start to campaign for mass production and use of male birth control. Because to be honest with you, I'm tired. Every single year, we have a bill like this that comes before us. And it's never about you. It's never about you, it's always about us. Why don't you be in charge of reproductive health for the next couple of decades?
Ladies, I'm proud to stand with you today in speaking and voting against this bill, because I believe that when a woman has to make one of the most difficult decisions in her life on whether or not to have an abortion, especially in high-risk, complicated pregnancies, that decision should be between her, her doctor, her family, and her God, not the government. Never the government. Because the law is that a woman does have the right to choose, and it's really no one's business.
I asked yesterday, and I argued the point about rape and incest that seemed to be overlooked today, for the fact that, yes, there are young children who are raped, 9, 10 years old, with no support. Do you ask them to carry that child to complete term, and what do they do with that child? Will she make it that long without committing suicide? We don't know. That is not our choice to make, and that's a very personal thing. I'm going back to what I said yesterday about the United States, the House of Representatives. They will not pass this bill themselves until these exceptions are put in, because they found it too restrictive. I'm saying today, this is restrictive. Vote your conscience.
The bill was ultimately approved by lawmakers on a vote of 87 to 12. It now goes to the Senate for consideration. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
Environmentalists rallied at the Capitol this week, calling on state lawmakers to keep in place protections for the state's water resources. A bill has been introduced in both the House and Senate. These groups say would gut the current above-ground storage tank regulation and inspection program approved by lawmakers last year. But a bipartisan group of lawmakers who back the bills say their aim is to eliminate double regulation and focus on the most critical tanks near drinking water supplies. Here to discuss the legislation and its implications for the state is the Secretary of the Department of Environmental Protection, Randy Huffman. Secretary, thank you for joining us.
Oh, good evening, Ashton.
We should say that this bill was a result of the chemical spill last January. Obviously, a tough time for lawmakers who were experiencing with it right alongside the 300,000 West Virginians without water. Is it time to revisit this bill?
Well, it's being revisited. There are a lot of concerns. You know, when the debate was going on during the legislative session, there was a fear still in the air about let's don't miss anything. There was a concern over missing something. So as a result, we didn't miss anything. We got them all. And as our recent inventory and registration process has indicated, we've identified about 50,000 tanks out there. So that's a lot to try to regulate.
There's an interest group in Morgantown, an environmental consulting group, who says that this new bill would result in only 90 tanks being regulated of those 50,000 or so the DEP has inventoried. Does it go too far? Should we be concerned about that number?
The number is probably less important than what are we regulating. We believe, and we've said this, the governor has said this, we believe that we need to concentrate on the tanks that pose the most risk to our water supply. And that's what we still believe that. We still believe that. And that's more than 90. Our number suggests that there's about maybe 700. But still, that's a low number. That's very, very far below the 50,000. But with all of that said, rather than getting hung up on a number, we need to get hung up on risk. We need to get hung up on what matters. And we believe there are roughly about 5,000 tanks that fall within those critical areas that could impact our waters. And that's what we need to focus on.
This bill itself makes some major changes. Does that mean you have to go back and change that three-tiered regulatory system that you've put in place, those fees that you've been trying to assess? That all changes?
Yeah, if the Senate Bill 373 changes, and we believe it will based upon the discussions that are going on, Well, the rules that we've drafted and submitted, the fee bill that we've drafted and submitted, that all comes off the table. We have to go back and revisit that, which is fine. I mean, that's the way the process works. So if the legislation changes, the rules will have to change as well.
But has the department been consulted about these changes that are in this bill?
We're starting to have some conversations. We've been consulted a little bit. I think that they know that we need to be at the table because we now have the information. This inventory or registration process that we've gone through that's produced an inventory, that gives us a valuable information that we didn't have a year ago. And so, yes, we'll be at the table.
So briefly, can we do it without the annual fees?
There will have to be some annual fees. Yeah, you can't. It depends on what we regulate. But if we get to be able to regulate these 5,000 tanks, there needs to be a fee associated with that of some sort. It won't need to be as high as the one we proposed. But again, the fee will be directly commensurate with what the final bill looks like and what it requires us to do.
Secretary Huffman, thank you very much for your time.
Oh, you're welcome.
Up next, we'll meet the new superintendent of schools. First, here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the Senate today.
Among the bills introduced in the Senate today, Senate Bill 455 to allow boards of governors of institutions of higher education more flexibility in the procurement and payment of certain expenses, and Senate Bill 457 to permit West Virginia public schools the authority to hire the most qualified athletic coaches. The bill strikes language referring to a certified professional educator. Up for passage in the Senate tomorrow, Senate Bill 19, to allow early childhood education programs to operate 4 days per week instead of five. Senate Bill 243, at the request of the governor, to provide that nutritional standards for foods served in public schools may be waived during a state of emergency. Senate Bill 361, eliminating the prevailing hourly wage requirement for construction of public improvements. And Senate Bill 430, to give family law practitioners and family law judges a method of enforcing no-contact orders in situations not rising to the level of domestic violence, with the objective of de-escalating tense family situations. On second reading, Senate Bill 315, relating to civil actions filed under the Consumer Protection Act. The bill provides that courts be guided by the policies of the Federal Trade Commission and that no award of damages may be made without proof that the person seeking damages suffered an actual out-of-pocket loss. House Bill 2200, revising and recodifying laws relating to child welfare. This bill was recommended for passage by the West Virginia Judiciary's Court Improvement Board. It's the product of a bipartisan effort to streamline the child welfare laws in the state. And House Bill 2201, to provide a definition for net metering and requiring the Public Service Commission to adopt certain net metering and interconnection rules and standards. Net metering is defined as measuring the difference between electricity supplied by an electric utility and the electricity generated from a facility owned and operated by an electric retail customer.
Like so many years in the past, the state of West Virginia's public education system has been one of the top priorities for lawmakers this legislative session. West Virginia ranks as one of the highest in the nation in per pupil spending, yet one of the lowest in student achievement, and legislators are looking to change that. Joining us this evening is the man leading the charge at the State Department of Education, Dr. Michael Martirano. A native of Maryland, he took over the state as the state school's chief in September after serving as the superintendent of St. Mary's County Public Schools in his own home state. Superintendent, thank you for being here.
Delighted to be here.
Many West Virginians out there who haven't met you yet, who don't know you, what's your philosophy when taking this position?
Very simply put, I firmly believe in a child-centered approach that all children can and will learn, and I look to our 280,000 children as my own children and want to ensure the very best quality education for each one of those children.
Let's get to some of the legislation that lawmakers are talking about this session. Republican leaders are pushing through this charter schools bill. Mm-hmm. They want charter schools in West Virginia. Maryland had a charter school system, so what do we need to make those work here for West Virginians?
First and foremost, we want to make certain we have high standards for quality. We want to ensure that there's opportunity for innovation. We want to make certain that there's a program that's in place that's going to do something different than what the public schools are offering in terms of allowing us to attack the problems of which we have for our young people. We want to make certain that there's adequate facilities for those schools to thrive and prosper in, and to make certain that communities understand what the purpose of the charter school is, because I'm about great schools. Regardless of whether it's a public school, a private school, a parochial school, we want great schools, and we want to ensure a high quality of program delivery.
Is the department and your office being consulted with about this bill and about those schools?
Absolutely. I've had great conversation this past week, several hours of conversation with some of our legislators, and very intuitive questions being asked. Again, I'm sounding redundant, but ways to get it right. We want to make certain that whatever's in this bill, that it provides an opportunity to ensure high quality, and we're not compromising those standards. So I've been very pleased with the collaboration.
There was a bill passed by the House of Delegates yesterday allowing alternative certifications for teachers. Some high needs areas in the state that can't fill these classrooms. But union leaders, some people who are against the bill, say this belittles our teachers and the people who work hard to get that degree. Are these alternative certifications a bad idea?
Well, what we have to acknowledge, we have 22,000 teachers in West Virginia. Right now, if we were to look at our data, we have 700 teacher vacancies right now in our state. That means young people in our state not receiving the great instruction from highly qualified teachers. So we look at our traditional route to provide those individuals in there, but we also have to look at other programs, such as Troops to Teachers programs. We have Transition to Teachers programs. An alternative certification fills an opportunity to allow teachers to come in to fill those vacancies of which we currently have. So it's another offering that our superintendents are able to use to ensure high-quality teachers in our classrooms.
Did Maryland have a similar program?
We had different programs such as that that allowed for us to go over and to provide those outstanding teachers in our classroom. And so we want to make certain that we are maintaining that quality. Quality is the theme of my conversation.
So did they work? Did they work for Maryland?
They, depending upon the individual needs within different communities, they worked very well for communities that were struggling to provide all those teachers necessary to fill those vacancies.
There was a lot of talk at the beginning of this session about repealing the state's Common Core standards, mm-hmm. these West Virginia Next Generation Content standards, as we call them. Have those kind of been put on the back burner, or are there still conversations about Common Core?
There's conversations about Common Core. You need to understand that I'm a firm supporter in regarding to our next generation standards. We have to have solid standards that are college and career ready to ensure that our young people, once they graduate from high school, can see themselves in the future, going off to college, being prepared for career. We must have those high standards. And our next generation standards do maintain that high level of rigor and make certain that when our students are moving through our educational system that they're receiving, again, that quality education.
There are some states around the country who are rethinking these standards. They adopted Common Core, put their own standards in place, and are now saying, maybe that's not what we should do. What would happen in West Virginia? What would happen for teachers if we just repealed Common Core standards?
See, what we have to realize, this has been a four-year implementation when the State Board adopted the standards. And right now, my teachers across the state are saying, stay the course. Let us get this right, making certain that our whole basis of our assessments, our whole curriculum programs are based upon great standards. Standards are the roadmap in terms of how we're able to make certain that students are meeting those benchmarks. And that's what quality education is about, ensuring high levels of quality. And again, that level in terms of comparison to state to state. We want to make certain that these are benchmarked and that they're being adopted by other states so we can compare how the students in West Virginia are doing to students in other states. It becomes critical in terms of making informed decisions about, again, quality education in our state.
People get so passionate about Common Core, though, right, about this issue. Why is Common Core a dirty word?
Well, I think in terms of one of the main issues is that people don't fully understand the distinction between curriculum and standards. We need to understand that we have to have a communication to our parents, to our students, to our teachers, to all of our stakeholders within our great state, so that they understand that standards are how we go about what our roadmap is in terms of our benchmarks of what we want our students to achieve. The curriculum that many folk oftentimes bring up to me that they have problems with the curriculum is not a standard. There's issues that the counties can control that, that they're the ones providing the programs, and we provide that support to them. But I think there's a lot of misinformation regarding the distinction between a standard and the actual curriculum. And another piece is there's great concern that there's not enough supports to assist parents in assisting their young people in the educational process. Parents are partners, and we need to do a better job with communication.
Superintendent Dr. Michael Martirano, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Now here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the House today.
A
Among the bills introduced in the House today, House Bill 2688, relating to horizontal gas drilling and forced pooling. House Bill 2690, to require state institutions of higher education and certain other post-secondary schools or training facilities to adopt policies and procedures relating to campus sexual violence, domestic violence, dating violence, and stalking. House Bill 2694, to require all local special elections to be held during primary or general elections. And House Bill 2700, to provide discounted license plates to military veterans and a process by which veterans can elect to receive information regarding government-sponsored assistance programs through the vehicle registration process. Up for passage in the House tomorrow, Senate Bill 237, creating the Captive Cervid Farming Act and requiring the Department of Agriculture to regulate the farms. And House Bill 2274, allowing the Commissioner of Corrections to enter into agreements to provide mutual aid to the political subdivisions of the state, other states, and to generally cooperate with the federal government to provide for the common defense, protect the public peace, health, and safety, and to preserve the lives and property of the people of the state.
Have you ever heard of a service called Uber? Or how about Lyft? These ride-sharing services are popular in big cities across the country, but haven't made their way to West Virginia, at least not yet. One Senate committee took up a bill today that would change that, though, allowing these new businesses to set up shop in more densely populated regions of the state.
Members of the Senate's Transportation Committee took up a bill that would allow ride-sharing businesses to legally operate in West Virginia. Ride-sharing companies like Uber and Lyft run through smartphone software and allow anyone to connect with a local driver who provides taxi-like services with their personal vehicle. The legislation itself, Senate Bill 385, defines transportation network companies, or TNCs. It requires the companies get a permit for operation from the Division of Motor Vehicles at an annual cost of $5,000 and exempts them from regulations the State Public Service Commission imposes now on standard taxi companies. The bill requires TNCs to conduct background checks on all drivers, disclose the driver's pictures and license plate numbers, and have estimated ride costs available to the rider before he or she enters the vehicle. Brad Nail with Uber says because all of that information is provided up front, their service is safer than the average taxi.
When you're working on a TNC platform, it is all the parties to the transaction are known to one another. It's not an anonymous transaction like hailing a cab is, where you're getting in a marked cab, but you don't know who the driver is. The driver doesn't know who the rider is.
But not everyone is satisfied with the terms of the legislation. Jill Rice with the West Virginia Insurance Federation says there is still some confusion when it comes to what insurance coverage drivers and riders have during the stages of the ride-sharing process. She told the committee members they see the transaction as occurring in three stages. Stage one is when the driver activates the application on his or her phone to show he or she is willing to pick up a rider. Stage two is when the driver is matched with a passenger. And stage three is when the passenger is physically in the driver's vehicle. Rice says it's stage one the insurance community is worried about. The average driver carries a policy that covers only personal, not commercial activity.
What we want to make sure as an insurance community is that you, no matter whether you are a driver, a passenger in a TNC vehicle, a pedestrian who may be injured by a TNC driver, or another vehicle on the road who may be hit by a TNC vehicle, are protected adequately and that there is adequate coverage in place. Drivers and passengers could find themselves without coverage and no commercial coverage in place for this type of activity. That is the crux of our issue.
Counsel for the Transportation Committee advised members a committee substitute was drafted with that problem in mind. An amended version of the bill says stage one would be covered under a provision requiring a TNC to maintain minimum insurance coverage at $50,000 for injuries caused to a single individual, $100,000 for an aggregate of all passengers, and $25,000 for personal property damages. Once a driver accepts an offer from a rider or enters stage two, A $1 million coverage policy from the TNC kicks in to cover both the driver and passengers. Senator Bob Beach of Monongalia County says he's been dissatisfied with the quality of taxi service in West Virginia for years, but the legislature has always been blocked from progressing by the State Public Service Commission or other cab companies. This is a measure, he says, he'd like to see move forward.
Now, today we have an organization here who's bringing something unique to the table, a TNC, Uber, whatever the company you want to call it. They have a product that will work in West Virginia, will work in communities like Morgantown, Huntington, Charleston, Wheeling.
The bill was approved by the committee, but committee chair Senator Chris Walter said because of time, the committee needed to pass it without amendments. Those amendments instead will be offered in the Judiciary Committee. Rice says her group wants a provision added to the bill that would require TNCs to notify insurers that their policyholders have signed up to drive for ride-sharing companies and require primary commercial coverage for those drivers. Policy writers and feel. This has been the legislature today. Tomorrow marks the 30th day of the 60-day legislative session. Senate President Bill Cole and House Speaker Tim Armstead will be back to give us a progress report on their legislative priorities and what they expect in the second half of the session. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us. Good night.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont, online at wvhtf.org.